We are mostly live and completely local. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to the Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. How you doing? Hey. Pleasure to be with you on this fine day. Ushering in a beautiful weekend. Cold, but beautiful. Temperatures 45 to 50, probably not even hitting 50 all weekend. And this is Friday, November 7th, the day of our Lord, 2014. Something like that, I don't know. A pleasure to be with you. As I've said so many times, it is actually your pleasure, not mine. Good to see you. I've missed you. If you listened to the show yesterday, you know how exuberant I was about spending time with you and touching your forearm. Today, not so much. Still have the allergies, man. Do you have allergies? Do you wake up every morning sniffing? Oh, man. I had a very embarrassing experience. I don't know if she's listening or not. I was talking to this wonderful young lady, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, she says to me, you got stuff coming out of your nose. And I went, whoa, how embarrassing is that? When another person, especially someone of the opposite sexual experience, says to you, you got something coming out of your nose. Oh my God. That just, if you feel good about yourself, it takes you from the highest mountain to the deepest valley in the core and bowels of the earth. When someone tells you, you got something coming out of your nose. Oh my God. In one sense, I appreciate the close feeling of being able to tell somebody else that you got something coming out of your nose. If I saw something coming out of somebody's, and by the way, it wasn't snot or anything like that. It was just the clear liquid of nose running. I mean, it wasn't like drippy, oozy plasma or anything like that, which would have been like triple, quadruple, kamikaze kind of embarrassing. But it was just a little bit of, clear wetness hanging around the nostril area, just hanging out, going, I think I'll be dripping out of this guy's nose in a couple of seconds. I wonder if anybody can see me preparing to make my leap. And apparently this young lady did and said it to me. And again, thank you so much. I had a feeling that it was lurking around the nostril area. I could sense some moisture in the area. But I didn't want to be obvious about it, and I didn't really know how much was collecting there. Apparently not much, but enough for someone to actually notice the glistening in that particular nostril area. I was very embarrassed, laughed it off, although felt like a little piece of schmuck dirt. You know, the tiniest little orgasm, I shrunk into a little ball sack of nothingness. But I did thank the person for pointing that out. Thank you so much for pointing it out. I, Ron Van Dam, thank you so much, would never say that to somebody else. Ever, 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 ever say it to somebody else. No matter how close I was. Which is a fault of mine because there's nothing wrong with saying that. As a matter of fact, you're saving somebody's life in their nostril area. Well, not really, but, you know, it's information well received, poorly received, but valuable information nonetheless. But I don't have those testicles to do that. I couldn't say that to any man or any woman. I certainly wouldn't point it out to a man. I don't do anything with men. I don't touch them. I don't look at them. I don't point things out on them. I'm very what is it, homophobic in that sense? I will not, I don't know why. I don't want to touch men. I'm just not like, I was like, I don't know. It's like they're disgusting to me. And I'm a man, but I don't want to touch another one. Women, I'll touch them all day. I mean, I touch that. Oh, your boobs a little bit. I'll touch that for a minute. But man, I don't touch you. I mean, to touch you, I can communicate with you without touching you. But I would never tell a man that he's got clear liquid coming out of his nose. I would never, ever, 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 ever say that. I would never say you have a hair out of place. I would never say your fly is open. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't volunteer that information, no matter how close I felt to other male human beings. And I guess I don't feel that close to other male human beings in order to tell them something like that. I figure that's their problem, and they're going to live through it. Would I save their life? I don't know, maybe. So I'm thinking about it. Females, whole nother deal. I care for all of them. Females are, I don't know. I don't know what it is, because I wasn't really close to my mother or anything like that. I mean, we didn't go shopping together or anything. But I feel an affinity to, I think all females are attractive, all of them, every single one of them. The ugliest female is attractive. If she has a huge personality, but is not physically attractive, I still find them attractive. I think the female body, I don't know God personally. I've tried to talk to him or her, or I don't think they have sexes as far as gods are concerned. I really don't know. But in any event, never walked by a bush that was burning or anything like that, and sounds came out of it. I mean, I never did. Never parted a sea, never... My water never turned red into wine, nothing like that. It didn't turn into white wine, nothing. So I don't have that kind of connection. So I don't know, but God, quote unquote, if you believe that God created all of us, that female concept where, yeah, I'm gonna make this human being who's going to be alluring to men. With various body accoutrements, and will also create a pleasure for the opposite sex. I will create the woman, and what a great job you did! Good job, man. Men, not so much. Men walk around with this. Excuse me for a second. They walk around with this thing called a penis. I don't know how to pronounce it. I've seen it in medical textbooks, but I don't know how to pronounce it myself. This protrusion that comes out of them, which is just so snake-like. It's weird. Women's extremities are basically the two breasts. Am I making somebody uncomfortable here? This is like a science lesson for you. This is biology 106. If you can't handle it, then okay. I understand. Women have the chest protrusions that stick out, and they're fantastic. It doesn't matter what size they are. They can be really, really small, almost non-existent, or they can be, I don't care for the big, huge ones. I'm sorry, that's a little freakish. We get freakish when we get... When we get out of the norm, we get a little freakish. Let's say that, okay? But otherwise, nice round little caps on the ends of them, it looks like. Very smooth and lovely, and it gives them a form. I mean, what a perfect creature creation. Nice, nice job, as I said before. Men, what the hell happened there? What the hell happened? What did you do? Did you take the day off? Men's extensions or protrusions from their body is like half of a worm or a garden snake or something in it. And it's got a tip on it as well, just like the women have the tips on their chest protrusions. Men also have a little cap on the end. But it's just a weird looking thing. If you saw one of these things on the ground, you go, oh, call somebody. Oh, look at that thing on the ground squirming around. It's disgusting. It's just absolutely disgusting. Ah. It's like a tortoise. It's like a worm-like tortoise. It's just awful. And it doesn't do what you want it to do ever. It doesn't. You can't train these things. And when it gets too big, on its own, you got to do things like cross your legs, put a table napkin over it. I mean, you have to, because it's embarrassing. If it's too small, it's the opposite. It's the opposite embarrassing. It's like, oh, I know I have one. I don't know where the hell it went. Hey, where are you? Where'd you go? It's just too unpredictable. It is. Women's stuff is tucked inside, and it's not going to bother anybody. It's not bothering me. I can't tell if you're excited or not. I have no way of knowing what's going on down there, and there's no snake there. So it's, you know, comparatively quite attractive. And the reason that I'm not into men is because women who have breasts, I think that's what you call them, women who have breasts are attractive, and even if they don't, they're attractive. I mean, it's just an attractive added feature. It's just nice. When men have breasts, ugh, I'm sorry, but if you're a man and you have breasts, I it was some kind of chemical reaction, hormonal, I really don't know, but ew. And that can happen in a man. I've never seen a woman with a penis. Ever, ever, ever. I've never, like, wow, you have a penis. Never happened. I've never seen it. If I did, I'd throw up. I'd throw up. But it doesn't happen. So I don't throw up. All right, kids, that's your biology lesson for today. I hope you've learned something. And I don't know how the hell I'm going to describe this in the podcast detail description thing. I don't know how I'm going to do it. But by the time you're listening to this, I would have figured something out. But I just think podcast is an expression of oneself. And I know that I'm not alone. I mean, I assume that not everybody agrees with me. At times, absolutely nobody agrees with me. But it's just crazy stuff. It's so crazy. It's so crazy. It's very, very crazy. It's crazy. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so confused, actually. I don't know where the hell I am right now.
Raise your hand if you would like a second helping of the Ron Van Dam Show. That's right. Part two of today's podcast is waiting for you on the homepage. So back on out, click that link, sit down for some more.
That's the wrong one. That was when the website would only handle a half an hour at a time because we were doing high quality HD audio, which we still do. But that was before I hooked up with various podcast networks across this great nation of ours. So I was like doing them all myself on my own website. This was back in early July when I started this thing. After leaving the radio thing for 23 years, and I keep throwing that in so you don't think I've like just walked off the street and decided to do a podcast. I mean, I've kind of earned my toilet seat here. So we had to do like part one and part two, very, very archaic. It was before they had automobiles and that kind of stuff. Here's pretty much where it stands now.
Now that he is finally free of the constraints of terrestrial radio and into the anything-goes atmosphere of the podcasting world, we can finally say that Ron Van Dam is one badass motherfucker. What was that? Okay, that's the way it's going to be? Great. Fuck you.
Oh, my God.
You're listening
God.
To the fucking Ron Van Dam Show. Oh, my God. On Metro South Podcast.
Oh, my God.
I didn't even say anything that time.
God, that's disgusting. Oh my God. Oh my God. That was a disgusting thing. That was disgusting. Bleeping things out, making you feel like that it was being cursed through the, that just because I'm doing a podcast that I can curse. Well, I don't curse.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
I don't know. You got me all wrong. I don't say bad words. Here's something that will blow the socks off your virtual feet. Your socks shall be exploding all over the place. You've probably heard about this. I find it fascinating. I'm scared about this because I think it started something that will never end. Here's what it is. As you know, we're getting into reality shows. And by the way, for the most part, there's no such thing as a reality show. 99.9% of the term reality shows are scripted and fixed. I hope you know that. If you think that Real Housewives of Teaneck, New Jersey is really a camera in a room capturing these women just saying things to each other, then you're fucked because you are stupid. If you think that these ghost shows, ghost hunters, ghost adventures, ghost pants, are real experiences inside supernatural places, you're crazy. They are somewhat staged and arranged. There are very few. The ones that are real would be the original reality series, which is Cops. That's a real deal. After, of course, everybody who's involved signs the waiver that says that you can now air this thing, I give you permission to air it. Otherwise, that's revised somewhat or not used. But otherwise, Cops is like real reality shit. I mean, that's really what's happening. Last Sunday, Nick Willenda, of the famous Flying Willenda family, of which many of them in the family have lost their lives doing daredevil things. That's reality. That's real. Nick Willenda crossed the Grand Canyon on a cable, but he was tethered to it. So as much as that was exciting, my pants didn't go crazy because, I mean, it's high up, but if you fall off the cable, you're not going to die. So, I mean, not that I need to see that, but I'm just saying, took away a little bit of the edge with that. Last Sunday, Nick Willenda on the Discovery Channel. Discovery Channel is getting really weird now. I'm discovering that the Discovery Channel is getting really weird. In Chicago, Nick Willenda on a cable walked across a cable, a tightrope as they call it, from a building about 60 stories high to another building about the same, but a little bit higher. There was actually an incline that he had to go on this tightrope. And he crossed that Chicago River thing, whatever that thing is that runs down the center of Chicago. I don't know what you call it, whatever, that water thing. It was scary crap because he was not tethered to it. Had he fallen off the cable, he would need to, as he's falling, grab onto the cable until somebody rescues him, if he's so lucky. Otherwise, he would plummet to his death. So that made it a little more edgy, I would say. He successfully did it. And then part two of his walk last Sunday was to go between two high-rise towers that were about 50 stories high, 40 or 50 stories high, but the same height. And he was going to do it blindfolded. And he did that too. I don't know how he pulled that off. I don't know how you could possibly walk a tightrope blindfolded. Totally don't get that. Total not. Talented? Up the ass he's talented. Absolutely. But did it stop there? And the answer is no. And it's still on the heels of the Discovery Channel. On December 7th, yes, December 7th, Discovery Channel will air a special called Eaten Alive. And from the lead up, if you haven't heard about this, yes, it's a reality feat again, where a guy will be eaten alive by an anaconda snake and will live to tell about it. Two things make this, well, one makes it very, very exciting and one doesn't. It's very exciting for a man to be eaten by a snake and then to survive it by coming out of the snake again. And I'll explain how he does that. But the thing that kind of ruins it for me is that it already happened. It's not a live situation. It's happened already. The thing's been taped. And I'm sorry to say, the guy was eaten by an anaconda and was pulled out and survived it. So he was successful. So now when December 7th comes around on the Discovery Channel, I'm simply going to be watching something that already happened, and I already know the outcome. Takes a little bit of the edge off of it. I'm glad he made it and all that kind of stuff. This guy, his name is Paul Rosalie, R-O-S-O-L-I-E, and he is really into snakes and anacondas. Anacondas are the largest snake on the planet. They can grow up to 25 feet long, I believe it is. Am I correct here? Heep-a-deep-a-doo. Yeah, 30 feet long would be the largest of the anacondas. That is like a lot. That's a lot. 30 feet long is a lot. If you laid down on the ground and you were 6 feet tall, which you're not even, there would be five of you laid head to toe, and the anaconda would still probably be a little bit longer than you. That's a lot of anaconda. That's a lot of snake. They're big and fat tubular things. And when they open their mouths, which are kind of like hinged, but like just one hinge, so when it opens its mouth, it doubles the size of its entry. In other words, it is twice as wide as what it appears to be on the ground. It is capable of swallowing a fairly skinny man, full-grown man. Obviously, you can't survive something like this because the digestive juices and chemicals inside the snake would destroy your body and you would not survive it. Secondly, when an anaconda or any huge snake eats something, it first strangles it to make sure it's dead, and then it swallows it whole. It always swallows it whole, which is a good thing for this guy. Nothing is known really about the muscle power of the anaconda itself. Once a man would be eaten and inside the body of a snake this huge, would the muscles, the circumference of the snake, would those muscles strangle you inside the snake as well? This was an unknown. So what this guy did, Paul Rosalie, he's from New Jersey. And I think that says it all. he had made for him or designed a bodysuit, which entirely encompassed his entire body, which does two things. It gives strength to, it almost puts him in a capsule. It gives strength to his body so that it cannot be strangled by the snake's muscles inside the cavity of the snake, and it also protects him against those digestive acidic juices that could probably burn his skin off. So he goes into the gigantic anaconda, and the fact that you can even go inside of an anaconda means that's one freaking huge snake. He goes in head first. And the funny thing, I always find it, because he's done interviews and I've heard them, he always says everybody knows that when you go inside a snake, you have to go head first. And I'm saying to myself, well, duh, everybody knows that. I think when you're born, it's the first piece of information that you receive is, you know, like, where's mama's milk? I'm colicky. And, well, of course you go head first into a snake's body. I mean, everybody knows that. So this wildlife expert, Paul Rosalie, they capture this anaconda snake, this huge, big, freaking snake. And with a team of people around the snake, he is head first. He goes inside the anaconda. And, yeah, and he's in there. I guess his feet have to be inside the snake to make it an official. And it has to be official. And then you're saying to yourself, well, okay, that sounds horrible. How the hell do you get out of an anaconda head first? And apparently he had cable and rope tied to his feet. And at a point, once he was in there, they pull on the rope, his team does, and he comes out for feet first. Everybody knows you come out of an anaconda for feet first. Everybody knows that. You always come out of an anaconda feet first. What, are you serious? Everybody knows that. Oh, man. So he survived. It's already done. Again, taking some of the edge off of the live thing. But it's fascinating to watch. This is December 7th on the Discovery Channel. It's called Eaten Alive. And no, it's not a zombie apocalypse movie. Or about five gay guys who crash into the Andes Mountains and they have to eat each other to survive, and happily so. It's not that either. One of the offshoots of this TV special is that the people from PETA, not the people that make that Middle Eastern bread. I'm not talking about that. The PETA Pocket people. PETA Pocket, pick the pack of pickled peppers. How many PETA Pockets is PETA Pocket Pete? The PETA people, the animal protection people, are complaining. They've got more than 6,000 signatures. They're trying to get Discovery to yank the show so that it does not air December 7th. They think it's cruel to animals. Let me tell you something. I love animals. I'm very protective of animals and how they're treated because they can't defend themselves in most cases. But I don't really think that the snake was harmed. I think the only harming that could have happened would be to the stupid human being who decided to pull the stupid stunt. As interesting as it is, the human curiosity, I guess we call it, I don't think the snake was put out too much. I don't think they killed the snake. If they killed the snake after it, then I would say, nah, that's nasty, because that's just for the entertainment of the people. And I agree with that. But I don't know what happened, but it's called A Change, ACHANGE.org. And that's where you get on that petition in order to stop that thing from being aired. Yep, yep, yep. Here's a story. The special hasn't yet aired, but it's already stirred an ire of animal rights activists who call it an act of animal abuse to the highest degree and have pressured Discovery Channel to pull the special. According to trailers for the show, Rosalie, which is the guy in the suit, and a Discovery Channel team ventured into the Amazon rainforest to search for an anaconda, then prepare for Rosalie to be eaten alive by the snake, the largest of which can measure 30 feet long. After putting on a snake-proof suit, which we all have in our closets, and discovering and covering himself in pig's blood. I mean, who hasn't done that? Raise your hand if you haven't covered yourself in pig's blood for some type of pagan ritual. Yes, you in the back. Yeah, so he covered himself in pig's blood to make himself more palatable to the anaconda. And Rosalie then, in this special, he kneels next to the snake and he says, "We're going to make me as appealing as possible." So the snake just says, "Well, I got this big thing here. I might as well get a free meal." Rosalie is now making the snake talk, apparently. Rosalie then says the last words he utters in the trailer, You have to go head first. And again, obviously everybody knows that. According to reports, Rosalie is later removed from the snake by a cord attached to his suit after having been swallowed whole. Rosalie's been tweeting actively since the special was taped, so it's safe to say he emerged safely. Again, I don't know what harm would have come to the anaconda. The anaconda could have, like, said, oh, cool, I'm going to be on a TV show. I don't really know. I don't know if anacondas are aware of that that exposure or not. Anyway, fascinating stuff. Well, the elections are over, and as I've said before, I think people voted not for people, but voted because they were just pissed off. I call it the pissed off election, where absolutely nothing was being accomplished. Everybody in Congress, including the White House, were acting like big babies. That term getting nothing done sometimes is a good thing, because sometimes the things you can do can really screw things up. But the attitude of just destroying the parties back and forth, people are just damn sick of it. And I hope those parties realize that and see that. In any event, the onus is on the Republicans now to show what they can do when they are, quote-unquote, in control. And also to see if Obama, the president, wants to leave a legacy of acting well during his last years or being a failure president in the eyes of the public. So, it'll be fascinating, to be sure. I predict nothing will be done. And as I've said before, I compare politics to a football game. One team is the Republicans, the other team is the Democrats. And it's not that the Republicans win or the Democrats win. It's that one of the teams shoots itself in the foot and plays horrible football. So no team really wins. It's just one team kind of loses. And thus, ladies and gentlemen, the American public being held captive to some bizarre childish game going on in your country's capital, where you are the pawn, you are the fool, and you are the victim, while these other people just sit in their chairs and go, hey, look, I'm in power, I'm in power, I'm in power. Which means you can have affairs with people and because you're in power. You'll always get a table in a restaurant, that kind of thing. Oh, the tangled web we weave. I love this country, but it just, its efficiency rating is like 2% out of 100. If this country could run on 100% efficiency, how great would that be? It's interesting because this country is strong and mighty even when it sucks. Think of how great it could be if it didn't suck, if it was efficient and did things and made its own people better and better off and more content. And wow, it would be incredible. Let just tell you something? The Obama years have not been that horrible. Gas prices are like lower than ever. There have been 63 straight months of economic expansion. A depression was averted. The deficit has been reduced by 2/3. Did you know that? Healthcare laws are working and lowering costs and providing care to more Americans than ever before. There are two women on a Supreme Court. Bin Laden is dead. Stock market is at record heights. The unemployment rate has dropped from 10.2 to 5.9. Not entirely a horrible run. But I speak that as an anti-Republican, so take that for what it's worth. But it's not like things have been getting worse. What is not good is that this country is not progressing in the sense of its people being better off. That's the problem. Most people are making just as much money salary-wise as they did 8 years ago, and that's a sucky thing. But here's the problem. It's really not Congress, and it's really not the president. It's your businesses. It's your businesses. When we suffered that recession, which was kind of a quick depression thing, it was awesomely awful. So many people out of work, so many horrible things happening, cities and towns going bankrupt practically, not being able to operate, operating on half the size of their police departments, etc. The problem was that our companies, where people are employed in this country, learned through a difficult economic experience that they can still survive on less employees. Make the employees that you do have work twice as hard. And so many, many companies have hired more, but are nowhere near the levels and the pay salary commitments that they were before this debacle occurred, like in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, when this country was extremely rich. And it's not like that now. And I don't think it'll ever be, because companies have learned to operate with less employees. They've learned that you don't have to pay your employees really well. They'll just be happy to be working anywhere. And that's the attitude of many of these companies, I'm sorry to say. And we are now turning this country into a minimum wage country, where someday, if we're not there already, the majority of people employed will be making minimum wage or performing some type of a service job, where their worth is simply distributing a hamburger on a plate to somebody in a coffee shop. This country was built on manufacturing and industry. Not that I want to pollute or anything. There's clean ways of doing all of this. But they were leaders in industry. And those are the jobs that mean something. The days when Massachusetts, which is from where we podcast, it was a technology state. It still is, but less than it was before. And unfortunately, this country is learning a hard lesson. And I don't know how you change it. Companies can do what they want to do and have proven that. And they've just learned that you don't have to spend so much money to make money. They learned that through going through their depression. So that's unfortunate. It has to be turned around somehow. I don't know. Itty bitty bitty boom. Itty bitty bitty boom. Anyway, sad. Ladies and gentlemen, let's move on. We'll talk about this some other day and see if we can come up with some answers and resolves. Right now, I'm going to talk to a young lady who is actually right now in Florida, believe it or not, and I'm very, 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 very jealous. Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you want to be in Florida right now? Temperatures this weekend are going to be in the mid-40s. Yeah. Well, she's with Expedia. She's in Disney World right now, as I understand it. Let's hook her up. Let me get this phone hook up here. I am joined now by national known travel expert Sarah Gavin. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Guess where I am?
Outside in the coffee shop.
No, much better than that. I am at the magical Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, and I have Cinderella's castle behind me, Queen Elsa herself.
Oh, my God.
She lit it up. She's doing the traditional Christmas lighting this year. You know, she's got her ice towers, and you know, that magically turns on miles and miles of Christmas lights. Really spectacular.
What's the temperature there? Is it warm?
It's going to be about 80 degrees, and I have to say, yesterday there was, like, virtually no humidity. It's kind of the perfect time to come to Orlando.
Oh, man, it's about 50 here, and I'm on my way. You know, a lot of people travel during the holiday season, don't they?
They do indeed. We see between October and December of this year, we think there'll be about 21 million people in the U.S. traveling.
Wow. And that can be very stressful, but at the same time, I guess it doesn't have to be.
You know, that's right. One of the biggest stressors that we hear from people, and we did a big vacation deprivation study at Expedia that looks at, you know, what are the things that get people to travel? What are the things that keep people from traveling? And the big thing we hear, the number one stress, is making sure that they're saving money. And so, you know, that's a big part of why Expedia is here. We think about, you know, big tips like booking your flight and your hotel at the exact same time, right? We're all used to doing that. Like, nobody would get their cable and their internet from two different places now, right? Everybody understands. You bundle those things, you save money.
Right.
The same thing is true in travel. You know, booking your flight and your hotel together across all destinations that Americans go to saves about, on average, up to about $540. And then big resort destinations like Mexico or the Caribbean or Hawaii, you can save more like $800, $900, even $1,100. That's real money to either invest in your vacation, you know, spend more days there, or do golf or spa, or if you're at a place like Walt Disney World, have, you know, more days at the park, or save that money and use that for the Christmas presents you need to buy at home.
Interesting. You know, I know Expedia did a study on vacationing, and I've spoken to many guests who live in Europe and in different countries, and they have, their minimum is like 4 weeks off per year, and they use it. They when it's holiday, they take it literally. They are gone. In this country, it's like really different. We kind of don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. So what we see in the Expedia Vacation Deprivation Study, which we do, we've done this for 14 years. We surveyed 26 different countries all across the globe. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, they tend to get between 25 and 30 days off. And by and large, they take 100% of those days. And that doesn't include things like, you know, actual like holidays and things like that. In the U.S., what we see this year is, on average, Americans are getting from their employers about 15 days of vacation, and we're still leaving a day on the table. You know, there's just no excuse. You know, there's so many ways to save money. You think about, everybody's, you know, addicted to their smartphone at work. Use that smartphone for good, not evil, and go, you know, download an app like the Expedia mobile app and save 40% off on last-minute hotels and make sure you sort of get away. There's a lot of ways to make sure you can sort of overcome that economic hurdle and get out there and take that vacation.
It's the first time I've ever heard somebody say, don't use your smartphone for evil.
use it for the good of travel.
For the good of mankind.
Exactly. You can come down here with me. Use it to come down to Walt Disney World and get your Mickey Mouse ears on like I've got.
I've heard that's really good time of year to go to Disney World or to one of the Disney locations because it isn't like really crowded. It's kind of like a good time.
That's right. You know, especially if you have kids who are either, if you've got like preschool kids or if you want to come without kids.
Yeah.
This is a spectacular time to come. The lines aren't super, super long, and, you know, and yet you get all of that magic of the perfect Disney holiday. Whether you're coming to one of the parks, or you're going to a place like Aulani in Hawaii, or you're going on the Disney cruise, there is the magic of Christmas all over the place. You know, I'll say even if you've got kids who and you're sort of bound by your school schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Disney World was, you know, when we were kids, where you had to stand in line and you were kind of at the mercy of the map, you know, that paper map of, oh, gosh, where do you think we should go next? There's so much technology all across these parks that help you, you know, you can book your fast track tickets in advance, so you know exactly what time you can show up and get on that favorite ride. You can use your Disney Magic Band that that can pay for your food, so you can go, you know, so send the kids off to go get their lunch or go get, you know, their churro or their pineapple Dole Whip for those of you who spend a lot of good time there. You know, all the favorite snacks across the park.
You know,
you can use your mobile phone just to check, to, you know, wait times and things like that.
Right, instead of using it for evil. So you know, I'm not a kid anymore. I don't know if I sound like I'm 12 or not, but I'm not. And I mean, I would go to Disney World in a minute, even though I'm much older, because it makes you a kid again. It's kind of interesting.
I mean, it's absolutely true. Yeah, I got to hang out with Queen Elsa and Princess Anna earlier today, and I was, you may as well have thought I was a six-year-old little girl. I was so unbelievably excited. And there's just something about, you know, watching all these people just have these incredible travel moments all across the park. It just warms your heart, and it's, you know, remind you the humanity that comes out when you travel.
Well, there's nothing like it anywhere in the world, these kinds of places, to just relax, unwind, and get into a fantasy world. You know, why not? When you get away, really get away.
That's right.
How can we get more information about all the Expedia deals and places we can go?
Check out Expedia.com or the Expedia mobile app, or we've got a blog called Expedia Viewfinder that's got tons of tips about lots of destinations, including tips for moms who are mom experts on Disneyland and
Excellent.
Disney World.
Perfect. Well, have a great time. I don't want to hold you up to having a great time with the princess. And everybody, use your smartphones for good, not for evil. And thank you so much, Sarah.
Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
Safe to you. Bye-bye. Thank you, Sarah. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to say bye-bye for today. I'll be back on Monday with more program. Until then, I wish you peace. Today's program has been sponsored by Expedia. We thank them very much for supporting the program. Have yourselves a wonderful day. Bye, everybody. Bye.